So I want to thank the organizers. This is a crucial time in the development of the study of the Hadronic-Leak interaction. We have some new data and we have some new theory. So what can we make of that? If we make the most of it, maybe we can go on and answer some of these interesting questions. Okay, so here is my methodology. First, as an experimentalist, the first thing we want to do is determine the priority violating couplings. They're intrinsically interesting. Then we want to test the NC predictions of pionless EFT and the meson exchange scheme. So the methodology is to determine the couplings from experiment and then compare them, and then when you get the couplings, do they fit the various 1 over NC schemes? So here are some experiments to consider. NP spin rotation hasn't been done. It's difficult. NP circular polarization, ND A gamma, ND longitudinal asymmetry, P helium 3 longitudinal asymmetry, and then alpha spin rotation. These are all experiments that haven't been done, and it may be possible to do them. And I want to assess which ones are the most important to do. So here's the pionless effective field theory classification. My apologies to Vanessa. So there are 5 parameters to be determined. There's their NC classification. NC 0 is 1. There's a relationship between 2 of the couplings, which reduces the number of experiments you need by 1, so we need 4 experiments. So these are the 4, and the experiments have to be done at low energy and low Fermi momentum. So these are the experiments that are possible. So there's NP goes to D gamma, A gamma, that's done. NP goes to D gamma, the circular polarization, that's not done, or it's done so with such low precision that it doesn't influence anything. There's NP spin rotation, not done, and PP longitudinal asymmetry, done. Now these experiments have are sums of the C's. The results of these experiments are weighted sums of the C's, except for NPD gamma, where we have our preliminary result, and from that we can determine one of these couplings. That's what it is.
I have a question. Roxanne mentioned or talked the possibility of measuring other analyzing powers. What about analyzing power of NP, polarized neutrons on proton charging?
That's been done. Yeah, that's it. In PP longitudinal asymmetry.
By those PP, I mean, so Roxanne was proposing NP.
Well, it's hard to get. So that's a valid question, and I thought about that actually. The thing is, if you want a polarized neutron beam, they're too weak. You can't do it at threshold, because you know that's the optical theorem tells you it's zero at threshold. So you have to do it at some finite energy, and you need say a 20 MeV polarized neutron beam that has, you know, at least tens of nanoamps. And it doesn't exist because you can't, it's hard to make high-energy polarized neutron intense because it's a secondary beam. You would start with polarized deuterons and then strip away the proton, and that would be what would hit your target. But it's orders of magnitude lacking in intensity. It's an interesting point. So, okay, where are we?
I think that your second one needs the vector over the photon instead of the N.
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, now, what, the second one?
P gamma.
Yeah, that's n plus, that's the circular polarization of the photon, the second one.
So I call one arrow then over the n.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be singles.
Yeah, oh, sorry, you're right, thank you. Okay, so what do we do to test, so what I'm going to do eventually is quantify the impact of these different experiments, but I'm just going to describe where I'm going. So we want to measure NP spin rotation, one of circular polarization, photodisintegration, or a calculation, and then we have measured the four things, and we get a clean determination of the Cs.
How do you measure four things when you have one of them being a calculation?
Well, my theoretical friends tell me that these are all equivalent.
I'm an experimentalist, and
I accept your criticism. I'm not a theorist here. I don't want to.
Why do you think there are four that you need?
Because there are five Cs and one constraint.
No, but remember that constraint came along with an ordering, so. That constraint is no more or less a relationship than any of the other orderings.
But I thought that they both had the same NC dependence. Both sides had the same NC dependence.
Right. So you're using a large N result to go from 5 to 4.
Yes.
But the other part of the large N result goes from 4 to 2.
Does that mean you, but does
so
that?
You only need two experiments at leading order in the dual expansion of large N and EFT.
Okay, I didn't appreciate that. Is that in, does you say that in your paper?
Yes, we do.
She said it in her talk.
So two, well, look, I looked at your paper and said from PP and NP goes to D gamma, what could you determine? And you can't solve for, unless you reduce the number of Cs.
Okay, so the Cs are two, they're two Cs, and you've got the PP results.
Oh, but I see five Cs.
So you notice that the leading in NC, that is NC to the power of 1 versus NC to the power of 0, sine squared theta, you see that there appear to be three things that scale as NC to 1 power, the first two and the fourth. But as you point out from equation 34, there's a relationship. So really, the three leading ones are only two. So you have exactly two unknown LECs at leading order in the simultaneous.
So, wait a minute, I count five, and then are there more relations such as this one?
No.
Okay.
Well, I don't want to, so look, if it's two, that's great. Because we have two experiments.
Yes.
But.
Then what does that mean? Are we done?
No.
Welcome.
Well,
the
we're not done.
Are the prefactors the same? You know, of order is not the same as saying identical.
That is correct. And you notice that the equal sign, is 1 plus order 1 over NC squared. Okay, so 34 is correct as NC goes to infinity. Right? And as NC goes to infinity, you clearly see only three of those guys out of the five live. Right?
Yeah.
And because of this relationship, only two of them live.
Okay, so you can, so what you're
saying. Well, only two are independent.
Well.
Yeah. So you can.
If you want.
Yeah.
So then one, two, and four should describe all of the experiments?
One, two, and four.
But those guys say your experiment's zero.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, then you're getting rid of all the sine squared theta W's.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, tragedy.
What is it if you get zero if you take the leading order theory? And we don't get zero. here, but we need more.
Okay, well, look, this is, well, okay, look, this is the analysis I did. So let me go on.
Actually, I like this, and I want to see it, because after all, again, as Matthias said, these are trends. Let's see what happens with your four guys.
Well, we don't have them. We don't have four experiments. We have two experiments. And then, so you're I think you're saying that any of the experiments can be described by the couplings labeled NC.
Except for the relationship in equation 34, which leaves only two that are independent.
There might be experiments where neither one contributes, which is the case in NPDGAMMA.
Right. NPDGAMMA is not going to give you either one of those two leading guys.
So what? We worked hard to do it. What should we do? That was
hard. You got to admit that.
Which is good, because then it gives, hopefully, information on one of the lower order guys, or higher order guys, which is fine. It's not the low-hanging fruit. So you went and got something that was not low-hanging. I don't need to tell you that.
Oh, I thought I did. I thought determining H pi 1 was important.
It is. You're going to tell us how good this suppression is.
Well, it's not zero.
At the end, in one, it's 5 years back.
What?
5. You have 5 constants.
Okay, well, hold on. So I think this, let's leave it at the last line. That quantity, that coupling divided by that strong constant is, that's the answer.
That's if you take delta I equals 2 equals 0?
No, I just, there's only one coupling.
Oh, in PDGAMMA, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's only one coupling, so.
So that's
what?
What are the units?
In the V to the minus 1.
Why is the ratio of 2 to the dimension pool?
I took that from the paper.
Do the coefficients have different dimensions?
Yes.
Okay. But why? They define differently?
Because the denominator has no dimensions for the no derivatives in the operator, so it goes as in V to the minus 2, whereas you notice there's a P wave there, there's an additional derivative in the numerator.
Yeah.
Well, so C0 is so strong.
That's right.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that's this 1 over A minus. Okay.
So you're zero to 2 sigma.
Yeah. Okay, so we did that. Now, the Vezin exchange picture. So there are 7 couplings that correspond to 7 P odd rotational invariants. There is their label, and DDH gives reasonable ranges and sets H pi 1 prime equal to 0. Then if you know the values of all of these, every parity violating observable is a weighted sum of the couplings. And here are the weighted sums for the data that are available and that I've analyzed. So, some remarks to that. So the AV18 potential is used everywhere. It's important because the observables depend on both the couplings and the strong interaction. Different strong interactions can vary by 30%. Four, six, eight, nine, and 10 determine the same linear combination, and 1 and 2 determine the same linear combination. That leaves 6 independent quantities and 6 couplings to determine. If you set H rho prime equals 0. So, what do the experiments tell you? Well, if you only had one coupling, then the error in the one experiment, but it was dependent on one coupling, then the error in the extracted pion cup, the H would be the ratio of sigma to the expansion coefficient. Those are the expansion coefficients. So what you would like, but we don't enjoy that. Every observable is a combination of several meson contributions. Now you see that H2 is going to be difficult to determine because it has small, a lot of them are zeros, and the ones that that do exist are pretty small. And H rho 2 only occurs in two-body observables. Now NPD gamma is protected.
So these numbers in this table.
Yeah. So
the impact of a given coefficient.
So if you're measuring PP at 14 MeV, that doesn't involve H pi. It's this number, this mm-hmm. dimensionless number times H rho zero.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. so on. And so these for okay. So me.
19 H minus is actually 19 fluorine, right?
Yeah, minus is because I took the minus sign. The sign isn't determined.
It is in fluorine, and it is determined.
It's a hydrogen.
And the sign is determined. F18 is consistent with zero. F19.
But the sign isn't determined in F18 either.
It's only undetermined in F18.
Oh, it's determined in F19.
It is determined.
Okay, well, I took the minus sign in the expression, and it agreed. So whatever the minus means, I took the right sign.
For which? For 6 or 5?
For 6.
Well, 6, you don't have a choice on what sign to pick.
Well, I chose minus, because that agreed.
You don't have a choice.
Well, never mind. I took my. If I take the right sign through some.
Are you sure you're not talking about F18, where there
no,
is just an upper limit?
I take F18 to be 0 plus or minus 4,010 to the minus 7. Because, you know, that you don't know the sign of the matrix element
that
enters. So that is consistent with 0. Yeah. So there's no problem there.
No, it's not the sign of the matrix element, it's the sign of the effect. You know the sign of the matrix element.
No, wait a minute, the matrix element is the square root of a lifetime, or a decay rate. But look, let's agree on fluorine 18. There's a small offset in the measurement, but
it's not significant in fluorine 18.
Well, you get some, whoever the average of all of the experimental data for the circular polarization
right.
has a sign.
Right.
But when you're figuring out a coefficient of F,
I'm perfectly happy with that.
Okay. Then what are you arguing about?
I'm about fluorine 19.
Okay. Yeah. So I chose a certain sign for fluorine 19 to be minus, but it doesn't affect the result because minus was the right choice in my frame.
I frankly don't understand it fine.
I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
A question. So I want to revisit this point in regards to H rho 1 prime, which we know from various calculations a long time ago that it would seem negligible. But I think if we're appreciating large NC analysis and revisiting things as a consequence, then we have to recognize that it's big from large NC counting, as so Matthias tells us. And so, shall we not consider its role in our model?
No, here it is.
No, but it wasn't in your table on how
that special coefficient.
I just want to point out that's not exactly what I said. I said large N doesn't require it to be small, but there could be other symmetries that make it small, and that could be what Barry. I mean, Barry didn't use large N, but used other symmetries.
Very interesting calculation. He doesn't have an explanation.
But I'm only saying it's an upper limit from the large N, right? So large N doesn't say it can't be smaller than that.
So the reason I didn't.
I just think we should be very interested in interesting in mismatch between dynamical calculus and emergency scaling.
No, you should check it, right?
This might be a great context.
But I think your statement that I said that large N tells us it's big is not exactly what I said.
Okay, so why doesn't it?
I just want to know where it goes in the.
So Susan, why doesn't it occur in the table?
Yes.
That's because there are no theoretical calculations that include it, so I wasn't able to include it. And I would argue that it's one of my conclusions is we need to include H rho 1 prime in the calculations because, you know, there's a two-tier ordering of the delta I equals 1. H rho 1 prime is in the higher tier.
Since the operator structure that multiplies H rho 1 prime is the same as the operator structure that multiplies H 5, the only difference is the range. One is a short range, one's a long range. So given that the operator structure is the same, shouldn't the contribution to the thing be the same? And
keeping H rho prime or not doesn't really matter because it's just an extra parameter that sits in there that's not predicted in the lowest order theory. I'll show a result.
I have a question, probably easier to answer. Don't you mean, we have the matrix with the coefficients? That's fine.
What's?
The one where you get the matrix with the coefficients and the measurements.
Yeah, I'm trying to make this thing move. Why doesn't it move?
It is changing the slide.
All right.
I just don't remember the slide.
Yeah, well, I remember the order. Okay. All right, let's try.
Page up, page down.
So, this worked a minute ago. Why isn't it working now? There's an up arrow and a down arrow?
That should do it.
Just put your hand on the trackpad while you're using it.
Want to go backwards?
There it is. Mary, tell me a question about this. So, this is a simultaneous fit of all of these.
No, this is just the what goes into the fit. This is the data that goes into the fit.
I see.
So here's the observable. Here's the error. Here's the linear. Here are the coefficients in the linear combination.
So these are all independent lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. So this good news that PP and fluorine 19 have the same sign here because that's the correct sign. They don't have to be both either both negative or both positive, or whatever your convention.
But these are supposed to be experimental values.
Yep. These are experimental values. And then the F pi,
you don't have a choice on the sign of the experimental value.
The experimental value is positive, but it's also positive for PP, so everything is okay.
I should say that Seattle measured these two coefficients, and they must be correct.
Then there were other experiments that improved on in both cases.
All right, so here we go.
You don't measure perfectly, you measure on cylinders.
So then, there was a point I, yeah, let's see. Then there's a thing about NPD gamma. So I'm going to argue, and we've been discussing how having four coefficients and some of them not reported makes the determination of delta I equal 1 couplings unstable. But if you look at NPD gamma, the heavy meson contributions are very small. They're roughly 100 times smaller than the H pi contribution. Whereas in fluorine 18, they're 10%. So that means you can determine H pi 1 almost directly from the measurement of NPD gamma. Okay, that's it. So then, here are fits. So if I fit to the six parameters, now remember, if you believe, if you believe that H roll one prime is zero, then you fit to the omega one and H roll one. But H roll one is unfavored, and we've left out H roll one prime. So what happens is we get very big uncertainties and very big values, and you don't, so H omega 2 is 20 and so on. That's, this is outside of the NC, what NC would predict. So I tried reducing the number of parameters, but the chi-squared is great. So I tried reducing the number of parameters by one, and I kept H omega 1 favored over H rho 1, because 1 over NC favors H omega 1. Then I get these values. So Fi is 1.5, and it's the 1.5 in the previous fit. So the value of H pi survives this arbitrary choice. And I get a big negative H rho 0 with a 25% error. I get an H rho 2 consistent with 0. And I get a value for H omega 0 with a pretty large error. I'll discuss that later. And I get H omega 1 consistent with 0.
So what are the five experiments you're using?
I use all of the experiments in my table. I use that nuclei.
I mean, so is that the PP of 220 MeV?
Yes.
That's got all kinds of P and D waves and so forth, so there are additional degrees of freedom in that. But the whole point of that experiment is not
well, I took the calculation from the literature. There's a calculation by Carlson et al.
But that's got a lot of problems in it.
Well, that's what I took.
It uses a different set of strong couplings than Barry does. So when you combine them,
he uses the AV18.
He's using strong couplings in his weak potential that differ from DDH couplings. And so you can't combine them to get these guys, because what you really measure in the experiment is the product of the weak and strong couplings.
But he claims he uses the AV18.
That's in the strong potential.
Yeah.
In the weak interaction, where there's a strong vertex and a weak vertex, he uses an entirely different set of coupling constants than Barry does. They're all five factors of two. And so
these are the G pi and G rho.
It's the H rho, G rho. That structure is what you actually measure. And that's a product of a weak coupling and a strong coupling. And he uses the bond couplings. He doesn't.
No, he also does it for AV. He claims that
that is the strong potential used in the wave functions. We're talking about, you calculate your wave functions, you're done with that. Now you can calculate the matrix elements of your weak potential. His weak potential is not there as weak potential. So you can't combine them like this.
Probably ought to just take that out of your fit and see what happens. And that would, we could actually correct for that, because we
well, how much we did that. But you haven't, if you take it from Joe's paper.
Actually,
it probably doesn't play a big role in your fit because of the errors
I mean, it changes the size of the isoscalar coupling by factor 2.
Yeah,
I'd also like to ask if some of the viewers in the room could comment on how reliable they think the theory numbers are for some of the measurements with the heavier nuclei.
I'm assuming you got those from DePlanck.
I got my coefficient from DePlanck.
So they have
that's
nothing
not
to do with
the question.
They have nothing to do with the nucleon couplings that you get everywhere else, with two exceptions, the fluorine 18 and the fluorine 19. Those involve a calculation that literally depend on the full wave function of those nuclei and just tricky experiment with axial charge major decay. The other cases are based on shell model calculations, so they're incredibly truncated spaces And so we know all these couple of...
Well, that's not how I did it.
That's how calculations were done with Tantalum, with...
Well, okay, but it's, what I did was I took the, all of these are reduced by the correlation function, and I took Duplantis calculation. So what I calculated, and I think what you have to calculate for fluorine 18, you measure H pi, but then you have to calculate the other coefficients, and you use the Miller-Spencer correlation function.
No, that's not how it's done. It's done based on a ratio of amplitudes that are measured in beta decay.
Yes.
So it is the axial charge beta decay that determines the major results, the same major results.
For H pi 1?
For H pi 1.
Then how do you get the other ones?
The other ones, you have to estimate by some other means, but the point is that the H pi 1 is taken from...
I accept that.
But I think the issue here is so the Tantalum, the Tissium, and
no,
the...
No, so I'm saying how I did that. Duplantis gave me his ratios for the heavy meson contributions to that of H pi 1.
But Tantalum and Lutetium have incredibly complicated nuclear matrix elements that even beyond the capacity of a shell model to do it.
Yeah, he doesn't do it by calculating matrix elements. He calculates the attenuation of the coupling by the short range
You've got those are all doublet states. When you've got a mixing of two levels that are giving you the large enhancements of paired correlations. And you've got to calculate those resonant...
Let me say that the determination of the linear combination that enters here for the heavy nuclei agrees with the linear combination you extract from fluorine 18.
Are the numbers you're quoting for F for H pi and H rho 0, are those multiplied by 10 to the minus 7?
Yes, everything's multiplied by 10 to the minus 7.
Okay.
Unless otherwise noted, it's not in PE gamma.
So it's not the DDH normalization 3.8 10 to the minus 8.
No,
it's 10 to the minus 7. Right.
Comment, there is one more measurement that's not listed on any one of these, and that's in nitrogen 14, the parity mixing between the 0 plus and the 0 minus level that's sensitive to delta I of 0 and delta I of 2, but not delta I of 1.
Well,
and
I
it just ought to be in a tabulation.
Well, I made the same choices as Gardner et al. And as...
Okay, well, I'm just saying, if you're going to make a list in the workshop of measurements...
No, I'm making a list of that also, I fit it to.
Okay.
And other workers have disregarded nitrogen because of theoretical unreliability. So Gardner et al. Didn't include it.
But if you... I don't know that the reliability in nitrogen 14 is worse than it is in tantalum 181 or lutetium 175. In fact, I suspect it's not. I'm just saying, the workshop is, I'm not directing at you.
No,
I'm just saying.
I gave the reasons for including those, and I wanted to remark that the value that you get for, so there's a linear, I use the linear combination, the same linear combination, say for tantalum and fluorine 19.
But that's not fair.
Can I finish? So that's Duplantis X. The value of Duplantis X that is calculated for the heavy nuclei agrees with that from fluorine 19. So I'm not doing something that's wildly unstable.
Okay, I'm not directing this at you. I'm just saying for the workshop, when you have a list of experiments, you should include that one as well. That's all.
Yeah, then I have to explain why I left it out. The way I'm explaining why I left it out is that there are a series of papers by Holstein and Haxton, and by Gardner, Haxton, and Holstein. I use the same, except for these heavy nuclei, I use the same editorial judgment as they did. They didn't include it. Beat off with.
I'm not... I said I wasn't directing at you. I'm just saying...
But you've been talking about it for 5 minutes.
Because you keep on denying it.
Well, I'm not denying it, I'm disagreeing with you.
Just for our record, our papers said that there were four numbers that we believe, and only four numbers that we thought were.
Yeah, we also omitted neon 21.
Yep.
For the same reason.
Okay, so then, now I've established a methodology, a data set. So here, now, which new measurements will have the largest impact? So we add a new measurement one at a time, add new measurements one at a time, perform fits to the new, to the pseudo data and the old data, and we determine the uncertainty, then that fit gives you uncertainties in all of these quantities. We take the ratio, the logarithm of the ratio of the, so we determine H rho 0 in a fit, that's supposed to be big, it is big. We take the ratio, the logarithm of the ratio of the different meson, the results for the meson couplings divided by that of H rho 0, take the logarithm of that and calculate the uncertainty in that logarithm. So I'm going to make plots of that, and you'll see numbers like this, 1.3, and that is, that's the value of the pseudo-observable calculated from the fits, calculated from putting the fit values into the expression of linear combinations, giving a predicted value from the fit. So here is, I take NP spin rotation. The predicted value of that is 1.3 10 to the minus 7 radians per meter. And I look at the uncertainty in the logarithm of H rho 2 divided by H rho 0 as I make the measurement more and more precise. And what you see is that the uncertainty reduces by a factor of 5, and it starts, and you have to measure it. If the place where it stops, you should stop measuring is around 1 10 to the minus 7. Is that clear? So this says, here you've reduced the uncertainty of the logarithm to about 20%. So you could, that would make a nice point. If you did this measurement, that would make a nice point on a one, you know, comparing the predict, to compare to the predictions of 1/NC. Is that okay? Do you understand that, Eric?
I think I understand what you're doing.
Okay. So that tells me that NP spin rotation is a good thing to measure if you can measure it to 1 10 to the minus 7. Okay, now this also improves H omega 1, although not as dramatically. Now, and all of the others look pretty flat. If it didn't improve it by more than a factor of 2, I didn't put it on, so you don't have to look at a huge number. Okay, now, the predicted value for NP circular polarization is 0.8. And if you measure with an uncertainty of 0.05, then you get the same factor of 5 improvement in the determination of H rho 2. So you can do H rho 2 either by NP spin rotation or NP circular polarization. Okay, now we do N alpha spin rotation. That reduces H omega 1, reduced by 2, but you have to go to a very, very accurate value in order to achieve that reduction. And the reason for that is that there's a large body of data, fluorine 19 and so on, that have already determined H omega 1 pretty well. And here's NPA gamma, and that the expected value is 17, and that improves H omega 1 by a factor of 2. And here's the reason why it does that. If you look at the ratio of AH omega 0 to AH rho 0, those are the numbers from my big table. Those are all the same. They're all 0.9. But NDA gamma is different. So that allows you to determine a different linear combination. So here are my conclusions. I have to find my notes to myself. Okay. In order to test pi on CFT, we need to do NP spin rotation, NP circular polarization, ND photo disintegration, or do it on the lattice. Then we get a set. Then we can determine the four independent quantities, which Roxanne tells me are now two.
Yes.
So now, few body calculations of N alpha spin rotation, P alpha longitudinal asymmetry may show that the pattern of delta I equals 1 expansion coefficient in those nuclei are different than for many body systems. That would allow you to separately determine the four different delta I equals 1 couplings. Okay, let's start over. So we need NP spin rotation or NP circular polarization to get delta I equals 2. And you can imagine combining both of them. So the same measurements are important for doing the meson exchange scheme. The theoretical calculation should include H pi 1 prime, which is favored by the Phillips scheme, and everything should consistently use the AV18 potential. Okay, and then, suppose this works swimmingly, then we would be able to make a projection for this time reversal even scheme to a time reversal odd scheme and have at least an order of magnitude prediction of the couplings, the meson exchange couplings that you need to interpret neutron EDM experiments. So that's it. Thank you.
David, first, this is a matter of taste, but if we say to determine these things, you need the following experiments, and one of the experiments is actually a theory, I don't think that's my taste, okay? If I believe the lattice, I could have to do no experiments, okay? I just don't think that's a good way to frame the issue.
Are any theorists interested in commenting on that?
So think about a measurement like G minus 2 in QED.
Yep.
That experimentalists are working, really to spend decades of their life trying to improve. Yep. Because the theory has been calculated out to 10 places.
Right.
So theory is, the theory can be done well. I mean, Andre, the delta I equals 2 is special in the lattice, and Andre will tell you why. It's possible to imagine a precise calculation, but already the GA that he's calculated is 51%, and it agrees with the experiment. So that's pretty impressive awful lattice.
I think all Eric is saying is that a lattice calculation is not an experiment.
I had a big argument when he described doing experiments on the lattice. So I'm, you know, I basically agree with you. You shouldn't raise calculations to the level of experiment.
Or low.
But look, this is in the air. I've heard people say you could count, test delta I equals 2 on the lattice. So I'm just repeating that as a point of view.
It's not an experiment. It's something you could test by another experiment.
I just agreed with you. Why don't you say, I'm glad I
agree. I'm glad you agree with me. And one last comment. Do you really think that by expanding this theoretical scope to include time reversal violation, you're going to learn something that is going to be competitive with what you get from atomic EDMs and all the other ways that we study?
No, it's that you need to look. If you attribute time reversal to the hadronic weakener, to hadronic physics, then that all funnels down to the meson exchange couplings. There are time reversal odd meson exchange couplings which we can't measure.
David, but we atomic EDMs and neutron EDMs, etc., and molecular EDMs, all are sensitive to the time reversal violating, CP violating things at a level which is phenomenal. And I'm asking, do you really think?
What I'm saying is that in the theory, if there are several contributions to EDMs. One of those is hadronic.
Yes.
And if you make a theory of it, the theories always involve a sum over coupling constants times time reversal odd meson couplings. We know nothing about those.
We do.
How do we know them?
From the limits on permanent electric dipole moments of hadronic systems.
We know EDMs.
Yes.
Okay, but we don't know how the meson exchange couplings enter into those.
I think he's arguing that in experiments like Mercury 199, that the major source of the CP violation, if it's hadronic, comes from the polarization diagram, not from the direct EDM of the nucleon. And therefore, the polarization diagram looks like some kind of meson exchange. That's true.
Of course, the meson
exchange operator has nothing to do with the parity violation operator because the operator has to have a different functional form or wouldn't be CP violated.
So there was a paper by Musoff and Chuck where they wrote out some nuclear physics measurement in a representation that involved time reversal log meson exchange coefficients times things that they calculate. I'm just saying we know about EDMs, we know nothing about the time reversal odd meson exchange couplings.
Am I off base here? Look.
No, I'm gonna remark that the only point is that there are many different kinds of contributions that can enter in an EDM. And so the point is that there are many different operators at the quark level, many different operators that translate into hadronic and CP violating effects. I suppose the way in which you would interpret, so for example, if I look at the table on the latest Mercury 199 paper and look at the limits on various things like the effect of EVM of the neutron, et cetera, that's all assuming that the source of CP violation, the actual limit is saturated by that source.
Let's just take the neutron by itself.
Okay. No, but I'm just remarking that in any complex system where you have many different sources, then the limit on any one could be evaded by cancellation. That I think is what he would maybe want to say in regards to his analysis.
But look, let's take the neutron, so we can keep the argument simple, okay? physics that's going on inside the neutron is the same as the physics going on inside this other hadronic system, the basic physics, right? That limit is so
that's the issue, is that on the, what you're measuring, if you knew the neutron EVM, could you predict the nuclear EVM? The answer in generic is no.
No, but I'm...
Right.
Okay. And it's not even the leading contribution to nuclear EVMs in many
fields. Right, but we got to keep in mind the order of magnitude and precision of the results.
Yeah, all I'm saying is that the polarization diagram that appears in Mercury 199, say the CP violation is the theta parameter, then it's known that the dominant source of CP violation in Mercury 199 comes from long-range ion exchange, where one vertex is weak and CP violating, and the other one is strong. So it's similar to this problem here. And so you can imagine that if you knew one Mason exchange diagram, you might know something about the other. I think that's a big stretch, because the operators are fundamentally different.
Right.
It wouldn't be CP violating in one case and CP conserving in the other.
So here's my diagram. This is the simplest diagram that contributes to an EDM. Here's the EDM. You have to have cause a T odd contribution in the wave function here, and here is T even T, T odd T even. So that's the leading diagram, and a sum of those diagrams are what theories of EDM give you.
So I think maybe now is a good time to go to the next speaker and thank David for his presentation. So the last talk of the morning is Rick. We're out a half hour for the schedule.
While this is being booted up, look, it's hard for us to see the regular weak interaction in nucleon-nucleon, in these nucleon-nucleon forces, okay? The EDMs go like seven orders of magnitude below.
Yes, I think what I'm hearing is it may be there, but it's the probe sensitivity is orders of magnitude.
Right, many orders of magnitude.
Yes.
Three orders.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember, but still, 300 magnitude when you're talking about experiments is a lot.